Chapter 31. While we waited for the Dutchman to arrive and retrieve us, Skippy downloaded the data from the two drones the tanker had unwittingly dropped off before it jumped. To our great relief, we'd been successful. Both drones indicated the tankers had jumped to a point consistent with Skippy's hacked data, about the location and time where the two tankers planned to rendezvous with the surveyor ship and a destroyer that would be acting as escort. I was worried that the rendezvous location would be only a vague area of empty interstellar space, that the four ships of the Surveyor Task Force might jump into an area half the size of a solar system, and then we'd have to try chasing them down one by one. Skippy assured us the Theranin were much too competitive for that kind of behavior. Their navigators prided themselves on accuracy and hitting targeted jump points, so we would be able to count on them jumping into their designated points within 8,000 kilometers. Even the big clumsy tankers could be counted on to be accurate. That was good news. In the bad news department, Skippy explained that Theranin practice for a task force rendezvous, even deep inside Theranin territory, was for a warship to jump into the rendezvous point first, so we could count on having to deal with the destroyer before the softer targets. That ruined my hopes of us blasting the vulnerable tankers, then the surveyor, and then firing at the destroyer a few times to make it look good before we jumped safely away. However it was we dealt with the Surveyor Task Force, we needed to kill or disable a Theranin destroyer first. How the hell we were going to do that in our rebuilt star carrier was a damn good question. I had an idea, the unformed kernel of an idea. I needed to think more on it before mentioning it to anyone, especially Skippy. The last thing I wanted was to give that arrogant little beer can even more reason to be smug by shooting down a plan I hadn't thought all the way through. I needed time to think. And I needed to get out of my sweat and other fluid-soaked clothes. And I needed a shower. Seriously. When the Dutchman jumped into orbit, it still took the dropship 40 minutes to match speed and course rendezvous with her. I gave Sims, as the duty officer on the bridge, an order to jump the star carrier as soon as our dropship was secured in the landing bay. With the jump successful, I let Sims know I'd be on the bridge soon and brought Skippy with me to my cabin, sitting him on a shelf while I got in the shower. As the hot water of the shower cascaded over me, washing away the grime from my space dive, I relaxed and was able to think clearly. Out of the shower, I toweled off and sat on the bed a minute before putting on a fresh uniform. Skippy, that didn't go exactly as planned, but we did accomplish the mission. Your master idea was a stroke of genius. Thank you for that. No problem, Joe. If you're not here, who will amuse me with monkey-brained ideas? Yeah. Speaking of monkey-brained ideas, you know where each of those four ships are going to jump into, right? Pretty precisely. And you know when, also? Yep, I told you that. You said mission accomplished. I do not think it is entirely accurate. We only accomplished the first, less important part of the mission. We know where those ships will be meeting and when. We still have to attack those ships, and we do not have a realistic plan, hell, any plan for doing that. Not a problem. I got that covered. Not a problem, he says. Skippy sounded skeptical. Skippy, while I was space diving by myself, I did some thinking. You? Thinking? I find that hard to believe, but sure, what the hell? Surprise me. I came up with a plan for us to destroy all four of those ships, or at least three of them. One of the tankers may get away. That shouldn't be a problem. Letting one tanker get away if it thinks we're a Jarapha cruiser might actually be useful to us. A monkey plan. Does this involve, let me guess, magic bananas? Nope. No bananas at all. Damn, Joe, what fun is that? More fun than no plan at all, which is what we have right now. Unless you have some super genius idea of your own with your ginormous brain. No, I told you, I don't see any way the Flying Dutchman can be successful in combat with a destroyer, or the Surveyor. I don't see how we could even survive combat. Easy, Skippy, we will survive and be successful, because we're not going to risk the Dutchman in combat. Silence, then. Can I assume you do not plan to simply ask the Theranin to surrender? Because no way would the Theranin be intimidated by this bucket. We would need a much meaner-looking ship. This is why gangsters never drive a minivan, Joe. I mean, come on. How intimidated would you be by a guy driving a minivan with one of those stupid baby-on-board signs and sticky Cheerios all over the back seat? I had to laugh, imagining in my head a group of tough gangbangers rolling through the hood in a beige minivan. Nope, we are not asking the Theranin to surrender. I plan to hit those ships with missiles right as they come out of jump at the rendezvous. We will park missiles around the enemy jump target points with the missiles programmed to hit a ship as it emerges from the wormhole. We'll hit the destroyer first. You told me ships have to drop their stealth and defensive shields to go through a jump wormhole, so that destroyer will be vulnerable as it emerges, right? About that part of your plan, yeah, sure, you're correct. Ships are at their most vulnerable coming out of a jump. They don't have shields up, and their sensor fields are scrambled by quantum fluctuations of the wormhole. They're almost blind. So, yes, if you could predict exactly where a ship will emerge from a jump, you can hit it precisely. Even a single missile would destroy or severely cripple a warship. Now, with those obvious facts established, may I point out the annoying little detail of the fatal flaw in your genius plan? Skippy's voice had a mocking tone. You're going to anyway, right? That's affirmative. We're supposed to target the missiles toward the precise point where the Theranin ships will emerge from their jump, huh? The problem with that plan is we do not know exactly where the Theranin will jump in. The rendezvous coordinates for each ship are only accurate to within a radius of 8,000 kilometers, because that is the limit of accuracy of Theranin jump navigation technology. Even if we used all our missiles to saturate the spherical area where a single ship is likely to jump in, it will take any missile too long to detect the ship and close for impact. The target area is too large. Assuming the Theranin are accurate to within 8,000 kilometers of the target, that is an enormous volume of space to cover. The formula for the volume of a sphere is the radius cubed times... Oh, wait. Why am I trying to explain even simple math to you? Joe, a radius of 8,000 kilometers leaves a sphere of over 2 trillion cubic kilometers to search. While a missile is closing from that distance, the ship would detect the threat and jump away or raise shields. So, your plan won't work. Dumbass. Uh-huh. What if we could shrink the area where a ship is likely to jump in? Shrink it to, say... 100 cubic kilometers or less. Oh, sure, if you're asking for miracles. Why don't you ask for fairy elves to fly in on a unicorn and take care of that problem for us? That would be more realistic. Thanks a bunch for the vote of confidence in my predictive abilities, but even my awesomely ginormous brain power can't tell you where a ship is going to jump in with that level of accuracy. There are too many variables in a particular ship's jump drive at that exact moment. The charge energy, how many coils are in use, the level of calibration of how the entire system works together, we get the idea, Skippy, a lot of variables, yep. We're not going to guess. We're going to game the system by cheating. Beat the house. Oh, you know me, Joey. I'm all about cheating the laws of physics. However, give me a minute, please. I want to get popcorn and an ice-cold brewski. That way I can sit back on the couch and savor the moment while you make a complete and total fool of yourself with whatever moronic so-called idea your monkey brain has dreamed up. Okay, I'm ready. Hit me with your best shot. This is going to be great. You can warp space-time, right? What you're going to do for us is create an especially flat area of space-time, inside the radius where we know the ship will try to jump in. When that ship projects the far end of its jump wormhole, that wormhole will be attracted to the flattest spot in the target area by default. That's because the spot requires the lowest energy state to form a stable wormhole, or some other sciencey physics BS like that you told me once when I was actually paying attention. We will be able to predict almost exactly where a ship will jump in. Will that work? Skippy didn't answer. He didn't say anything at all. Skippy, I asked. Hey. Are you crunching numbers in there? Finally, he said simply, Holy shit. Yep. You are such an asshole. I hate you. He genuinely sounded hurt. Damn it. Uh-huh, got it. Is that a yes? However Skippy emulated a heartfelt sigh, it was convincing. Yes. Damn it. Ugh, I hate my life. A monkey has a good idea. A freaking monkey. Unbelievable. The universe is so unfair. Yes, it will work, Joe. I can control where a ship jumps to within less than 100 kilometers. Nowhere near as accurate as I am with our own jumps, of course. There are too many variables I can't analyze without being on the enemy ship before it jumps. 100, even 1,000 kilometers is close enough. Our missiles will be able to target and hit the enemy ship before it can detect the missiles and raise shields. Any ship jumping in will be a sitting duck. And hey, in case you think you're so freaking smart, I'm not going to create an especially flat area of space-time. What I'm going to do is create an area where the flatness is negative. Now he had me puzzled. Negative flatness? Isn't that a fancy way of saying it's curved in the other direction? No. Ask one of your scientist monkeys to explain it to you if they can. For them, figuring out how the universe really works will be simple compared to explaining quantum topology to you. He was entirely right about that, by the way. Because we had time while we jumped toward the rendezvous point, I stopped by the science lab to ask a team of human brainiacs how flatness could be negative. My thought was that Skippy had been screwing with me. Damn, it was like sitting next to a grandmother and asking to see pictures of her grandchildren, which, of course, no one would ever do unless they were insane, because any grandmother can inflict at least several hours of suffocating boredom while talking about her grandchildren. After the third photo and hearing about the mundane accomplishments of little Maddie or Timmy, the unfortunate listener starts wishing fondly for the sweet, sweet release of death. How come heart attacks never happen when you need one? Anyway, our team of scientists were more than happy to attempt explaining quantum topology to me, which should have been my first warning sign. They were especially excited because their understanding of the subject had taken a great leap forward during their time aboard the Dutchman, and they couldn't wait to show off their newly acquired insights. Somebody, they were certain, was getting the Nobel Prize when we got home. I didn't have the heart to remind them that getting home was still more of an if than a when. They tried. They really tried. The fourth time our resident rocket scientist Dr. Friedlander attempted to explain why X is the cubed value of the mu function, I mentally gave up. Skippy mercifully took pity on me at that point, for which I was forever grateful. He faked an emergency that required me to rush away to the bridge. That was the last time I was going to ask scientists to explain science to me. It was best for everyone involved. We dropped off four missiles, surrounding the spot where the Theranan destroyer was supposed to emerge from its jump into the rendezvous point, then backed the Dutchman away half a light second and engaged her stealth field and defensive shield. The missiles were hot, programmed to target the wormhole. They would go to full acceleration as soon as they detected a ship emerging without waiting for a signal from the Dutchman. The missiles would operate in pairs. Two would engage first, and if they scored hits, the other two missiles would stand down. We didn't have missiles to waste. If even one missile scored a direct hit on the destroyer, especially on that ship's aft engineering section, the destroyer would be a sitting duck to be carved up by the Dutchman's comparatively weak maser cannons. All we needed was one precise missile or maser strike on a reactor or charged jump drive coils, and the destroyer would become a cloud of particles. Our own drive coils would be fully charged, so we could perform a micro jump if the destroyer was merely damaged and able to shoot back, or a major jump if the whole idea somehow didn't work. Skippy did his sciency physics trick with creating an especially flat spot in space-time in the exact center of our ring of missiles, and then we waited. And waited. While, thanks to Skippy, we knew precisely where the Theranan destroyer was going to jump in, we knew when, only within a span of 10 hours. To be safe, we arrived at the rendezvous point 26 hours early. That was as fast as we could get there, considering we were racing two slow, lumbering tanker ships to the same place. We arrived, scanned the whole region intensely until Skippy declared it was clear, and we parked our missiles and positioned the Dutchman near where the destroyer was supposed to jump in. And waited. When the destroyer arrived, it was almost anticlimactic for us humans. The whole thing happened faster than the blink of an eye. Skippy assured us the whole thing was prodigiously, bodaciously awesome. I had to take his word for it until he replayed the sensor data on the display for us in extra super-duper slow motion. The far end of the destroyer's jump wormhole appeared first, appearing on the screen as gamma radiation in spectacular false colors. Skippy took some artistic license with that for our benefit. The wormhole was microscopic at first. Skippy drew 3D crosshairs in the display, showing that the wormhole was less than 30 kilometers from the target jump area, right where Skippy had created area of extra flat spacetime. The next thing we noticed on the display was not the wormhole expanding, or the nose of the destroyer emerging. It was two of our missiles accelerating hard, straight for the wormhole. Skippy had programmed them to home in initially on the gamma radiation of a wormhole opening, and the missiles did not hesitate at all. By the time the wormhole had expanded and the nose of the destroyer came into view, our missiles had closed half the distance already and had switched their targeting to the hull of the destroyer. Both missiles impacted the destroyer's aft section almost simultaneously, When I later ran the display back and let it run forward nanosecond by nanosecond, it still looked like they hit at the same time. One missile hit a reactor. Its warhead ripped through the reactor shielding like it wasn't there. We could see fragments of the warhead coming out the other side of the ship like a fountain, spewing white-hot particles out into space. That dramatic view was brief, because the other missile scored a direct hit on a cluster of jump drive coils and released their stored energy in a catastrophic flash. It happened so fast even Skippy wasn't sure whether that missile's warhead had time to explode on its own. Either way, the destroyer was instantly vaporized, and Desai had to trigger a short jump to protect the Dutchman from high-energy debris. One down, three to go. Our concern then was the Theranin might somehow have figured out our awesome new gimmick, and our incredible advantage would turn into a one-trick pony. We recovered the two unused missiles quickly. They had nicks and scratches from the exploding destroyer. Skippy assured us the missiles would work just fine. Then we jumped over to where the surveyor ship was supposed to jump in and parked the extra missiles there. We had previously parked missiles around the target jump points for the surveyor and the two tankers. Those three ships were scheduled to jump in anywhere from 20 minutes to 6 hours after the destroyer. We didn't know the exact timing. All we knew was the surveyor would jump in first. We need to kill the surveyor ship and at least one of the tankers. We almost did it. The second ship to jump in was the Surveyor, which in the super slow-motion replay looked a lot like the Flying Dutchman did now, a much-shortened star carrier, except the Surveyor's aft section was noticeably larger, with additional reactors and fuel tanks and other gear needed for extreme long-range voyages. Replay was the only good look we got at the Surveyor. Our missiles smoked it as soon as it emerged from its jump wormhole. It made a considerably bigger explosion than the destroyer had. Big enough that the two extra missiles we had hanging around the target jump point on standby got pelted with debris so badly, we had to order them to self-destruct. Taking them back aboard in their damaged condition would be much too risky to the Dutchman. Even a tiny breach in the containment system of an atomic compression warhead could result in the atoms being no longer quite so compressed. Two down, two to go, and the remaining two were not really warships. There were tight, self-conscious smiles and quickly flashed thumbs-ups going around the bridge and CIC, people needing to release tension and celebrate just a little, balanced with not wanting to jinx us by breaking into cheers too early. The surveyor ship would not be going to Earth or going anywhere. Our mission was not yet complete. We needed to destroy at least one of the tankers to sell our cover story of the surveyor task force being attacked by the Jarraptha. Without that, the Theranin might become suspicious about why the surveyor ship was prevented from going to Earth and render our entire plan useless. It almost worked. The tankers, despite traveling together, didn't jump into the rendezvous together. Their crews, Skippy said, likely had a rivalry, each crew wanting their ship to jump in closer to the target location, so each ship had been meticulously careful about calibrating jump drives and plotting the far end of their wormholes. Because in this case, Skippy had to project two spots of extra flat space-time, and those spots were separated by 150,000 kilometers, that strained even his awesome abilities. I know his abilities were awesome because he told us several times, at least. One of the tanker crews finished screwing with their jump drive slightly before the other ship, because one tanker jumped in before the other one. On the display, we saw the familiar flare of gamma radiation as the wormhole's far end opened and the bulbous front end of the tanker emerged from the wormhole. The trouble started when our first missile impacted. It hit the center of the tanker, not the aft end. Skippy later admitted he should have programmed those missiles to anticipate the tankers coming through the wormhole more ponderously than the surveyor and the destroyer had. Momentum carried the ass end of the tanker forward through the wormhole, even as the center of the ship broke apart. All this happened in a split second. We only realized what happened later by examining playback of the sensor data. The second and last missile, targeted at the first tanker, did manage to hit a reactor on the aft end of the ship, and loss of reactor containment ruptured a bank of charged jump drive coils, effectively vaporizing most of that ship. Unfortunately, in order to hit the vital aft end of the ship, our second smart missile had been forced to dive slightly into the wormhole itself. The missile knew the configuration of the ship, saw how comparatively slow it was traveling through the wormhole, and the missile concluded its best chance of hitting something vital was to curve around and dive into the wormhole itself. In retrospect, I wish that missile had not been quite so overeager for an outstanding rating on its next performance review, for its quick thinking caused a big headache for us. When our missile dove into the open wormhole and caused release of energy stored in the jump drive coils of the first tanker, it also alerted the second tanker that something was wrong, very wrong, with its sister ship, and that jumping to where the first ship went might not be so healthy for the second ship. Destruction of the jump drive coils caused blowback through the near end of the ship's jump wormhole, a distinctive burst of gamma radiation that was immediately noticed by the second tanker, and that ship's navigation AI automatically aborted its own jump wormhole as it was forming. The command crew of the second tanker wasted no time in redirecting their jump to alternate coordinates and jumped instead to an unknown location. Oh, Skippy said, and that was my first indication that anything was wrong. Destruction of the first tanker, like the destroyer and surveyor before it, had happened too fast for the human eye to follow. As far as I knew, everything was going great. Unsuspecting enemy ships were jumping in unawares, and almost instantly becoming fireballs. To my eye, I couldn't have been more proud. I thought of an idea that destroyed the enemy and secured the future of Earth and humanity without my own ship being placed at risk at all. It was all good. I was wondering whether, against orders, Major Sims had a bottle of champagne hidden away somewhere. So great was my confidence and complacency that when Skippy spoke, I figured it was to complain about a missile hitting a nanometer away from where he'd planned, something only a super-intelligent AI would care about. Uh-oh. What's going wrong in the world of Skippy? I asked distractedly, my eyes glued to the display, anticipating the second tanker to jump in any second, jump in, and be obliterated. Something is wrong in the world of monkeys, Colonel Joe. We have a potential problem. A quick glance around the main display told me nothing was wrong with the Dutchman's major systems. What the hell was Skippy talking about? A potential problem? You're not sure if it's a problem or not? Whether or not it is a problem depends on your mission parameters. Before you ask more stupid monkey-brained questions, I'll lay out the issue for you. The second tanker is very likely not going to jump into the rendezvous. The first tanker exploded while it was partly in the wormhole. It hadn't fully cleared the event horizon. Backblast would have been visible on the other end of the wormhole. No way could the second tanker have missed that event. Ah, shit. Suddenly I didn't feel much like drinking champagne. So? Sims asked from the CIC. We were almost hoping one of the tankers would survive to carry our cover story back to the Theranin. Correct, Major, I responded. The problem here is that tanker won't be carrying our cover story of a Jarapha task force marauding through Theranin territory. They're going to have a much more interesting tale to tell. A ship gets hit while it is still inside a jump wormhole. When they hear that, the Theranin command is going to want to know how an enemy could possibly know precisely where a ship will emerge from a jump, and you can bet they'll investigate. Every sentient species in the galaxy will want to know how we pulled off that trick, even if they don't know who did it yet. We don't want to leave any mystery behind. We need the destruction of the Surveyor and its escorts to be seen as a routine military action, something that happens frequently enough in war, and not anything worth anyone taking a second look at. We need to find that second tanker. Skippy, you know where the other end of that wormhole is, right? Plot a jump for those coordinates. Course laid in, but I expect the second tanker jumped away to an alternate destination already as soon as it saw something went wrong with its sister ship. Well, crap, Skippy, that's no good. We need to get there before its outbound wormhole fades away so we can track where it jumped to. Pilot, I ordered to Desai. Jump as soon as you're ready.
Aye, Captain, Desai acknowledged.
We jumped to where the first tanker had tried to jump in from, immediately engaged our stealth field, and began hammering away with an active sensor search to determine whether there were any ships in the area. The stealth field was on so other ships couldn't find us. We had it active so other ships wouldn't see that the Dutchman was not, in fact, the Jarapha cruiser that we pretended to be. Sensor sweeps came back blank. The area was empty. Skippy began scanning for a residual wormhole signature and found one quickly. Uh-oh. I was worried about this. That tanker jumped away like we thought. Problem is, it used space combat protocol for the jump. Remember how I told you ships can mess with their jump wormhole signatures, make it harder for a pursuing ship to determine where they jumped to? That's what that tanker did. As it went through the jump wormhole, it dropped off quantum resonators, the kind of like the crude flares your military aircraft use to confuse heat-seeking missiles. These quantum resonator devices disturb remnant waves of the outbound wormhole. That makes it difficult to figure out the original configuration of the wormhole. Difficult even for me. So you can't do it? I asked anxiously.
This was our first space battle where we were the pursuing ship. It required a complete change in thinking. I can do it. I can't do it with the accuracy we would prefer. Fortunately, the Theranan are still under the mistaken impression that quantum effects tend toward randomness, a common misconception of lesser developed species. Because I know how the universe really works, I've been able to map the pattern of the quantum resonators, unwind their effect from the residual wormhole signature, and make a reasonably good guess as to where that second tanker ship went. By reasonable, I mean I can tell where that ship jumped to within 600,000 kilometers. Great. A glance at the main bridge display told me we had plenty of charge for an immediate jump. Program a jump for us and we will... Wait! There is some extra good news, Colonel Joe, Skippy said. By some stroke of luck, or luck as you monkeys think of it, that second tanker is the one I infected when we flew by on our space dive, so it will be dropping off drones as it jumps. That makes it much easier to follow. I'm pinging the drones now, and... Yes, got a response. I know exactly where the ship is. That's interesting. It's going to a secondary rendezvous point. It is supposed to go to the secondary rendezvous if there is trouble at the original rendezvous location. Oh, darn it. The tanker is probably there already, and it's supposed to remain there almost 6 hours. After that, the tanker's orders, if no other ships appear at the secondary rendezvous, is for it to make its way back to its base star system using a random course. Damn it. We won't be able to use our neat trick of knowing exactly where a ship will jump in. No, I said slowly while thinking. But we do know from the drone pretty much exactly where that ship is now, right? Within 10, 12,000 kilometers, most likely, yes. Good. Great. This is perfect. If that ship does escape us, I don't want it to see us trying to use that trick again. Here's what we're going to do. We jump into where that ship is and launch missiles as soon as we clear the wormhole. We can project a damping field, right, to prevent the tanker from jumping away? A weak damping field, yes. I had to disassemble much of that unit's mechanism to repair the ship. You are proposing we act like a real pirate ship. Something like that, yeah. I love it. Jump course plotted and programmed in. Missiles are ready for launch.